you the concentrated mind that's good for insight practice, what's the point of the last four? They give you a mind that's even more concentrated, clearer, sharper, brighter, more malleable, more wieldy, etc. So they heighten your concentration. I would say from reading the suttas that the first four are sufficient, but if you're even more indistractable by practicing the higher ones, then the amount of time that you have when you begin your insight practice before the concentration wears off is extended. And so you might get more insights. So they're, a little bit more sharp sword for cutting the bonds of ignorance. How long does it take to move through the jhanas, and can I do it every time? The key is, can I generate access concentration? If I, busy traveling and I'm worried about my train ticket, do I have the number so I can get the ticket? No, I'm not going to get the access. I'm going to be sitting there distracted just like everybody else. If I'm on retreat and it's well into the retreat and it's going really well and, I might get the access pretty easily. If I really want to step through them briskly, I can do it in about 25 minutes. All right, so generate access and through the jhanas in about 25 minutes. So in a 45-minute sitting, that'll give me 20 minutes for insight practice. I much prefer to do a longer sitting, hour and a half, 2 hours, or lying, 3 hours, because after an hour and a half, my body starts complaining. But if I lie down to meditate, I can go for a long time. And then I can go through them a bit more slowly and generate more concentration. So say I'm doing an hour and a half sitting, I might take a half an hour working with the jhanas, getting them a bit deeper, maybe a little more. And it just depends on how it goes, 35, 40 minutes even. And then spend the rest of the time doing insight practice. So once you know them well, you can move through them, not at the most profound level, but as you step, it takes whatever concentration you've got and makes it deeper and deeper. Sequence, or can you jump in at one of the higher jhanas? Depends on your level of concentration. Do you always start your car in first gear? Well, if you're on a downhill slope, you might stick it in third gear because, you've got momentum on your side. If you're on a retreat and you have good concentration, you might jump in at one of the higher jhanas. I remember one retreat with Ajahn Amaro, and in the afternoon, where I'd been in the jhanas earlier in the day, and I was feeling really concentrated, I'd come back from the walking meditation, sit down, go into the third jhana, go into the seventh jhana, and start my insight practice. But that was on retreat. It was going really well, and I'd already been in all the jhanas earlier that day several times. So, it's possible. Interestingly enough, when people are trying to learn them, sometimes they learn them out of order. They're trying for the first jhana, and they wind up in the second or third or fourth, or even fifth, sixth, or seventh. The frequency, of course, most people wind up in the first, then the second, then the fourth, the third, the fifth, the seventh, the sixth. I've seen enough people sort of find their way in. People who go directly into five, six, and seven are very rare. I get a handful each year. But people who are aiming for one and wind up in two. What else going on with the body, and does this relate to the chakras, the energy centers in the body? The first four jhanas are often called the rupa jhanas. Rupa means materiality and can refer to the physical body. It says for each of them that one drenches, steeps, saturates, and suffuses one's body with the rapture and happiness, or the happiness free from rapture. Or one sits suffusing one's body with a pure, bright mind. So clearly there's body awareness. The PT is very much an energetic phenomenon. The PT energy seems to be the same as the Kundalini energy and the same as the Tibetan Tummo practice. That's the practice where they generate heat and they have contests where they chop a hole in the ice, dip a sheet in, and wrap you in the wet sheet and see if you can dry it. The contest to see how many you can dry overnight, right? Because as soon as it's dry, they dip it again and you go at it. That heat and the PT energy and the Kundalini energy seem to be the same thing. when it comes on real strong, there's very definitely a sense of it running up your spine and maybe even blowing out the top of your head. So there's very much a bodily sensation there. People sometimes report feeling like it's stuck. And usually when I ask them where, they'll point to what we would say was one of the chakras, you know, sort of the middle of my back, the heart chakra, stuck in my neck, the throat chakra, or something like that. So it may have something to do with that. As far as I know, the chakras were not mentioned at all in the suttas. I don't know if they were in any of the other religious traditions at that time of the Buddha. But I've had a number of students say, yeah, it feels like my chakras really opened up or things like that. But there's no teaching about that. But it does seem to be a really healthy thing. I've had a number of students come and say, does PT energy have healing energy? And so many come and ask that question. It seems like it does. I know it's adjusted my neck a couple of times when it comes on really strong and it pops. It's like, oh, better than a chiropractor. So, yeah, it does have a lot of bodily sense with it, definitely. Distinct states, or do they blur? The answer is yes. They do both. There are 8 very distinct states. I have actually meditated for science on a number of occasions with an EEG bonnet over my head, and they record what's going on the surface of my scalp, and also in an fMRI, which is not the best place to meditate. I mean, you're shoved into a tube, and it sounds like there's some guy with a hammer on the outside. But we do have pictures of my brain on jhanas. And in particular with the EEG stuff, you can see that I'm signaling with a little clicker to tell them I'm moving, I've arrived. You know, okay, so we know where I am because the clicks show up on the traces. And basically the states look different. So they are distinct states. I would say the first jhana you go up and then it comes down. All right, it's down. And then you're at a plateau and then there's a sort of gentle down to the third and then the fourth sort of drops down to the floor. So it's not steps, so it's not distinct like that. It's more of a gentle flowing from one to the other. But there are markers along the way so that you can tell, okay, this is state number 2, state number 3. When I'm teaching them, sometimes the students aren't clear. And so I've got to really ask them and ask questions. All right, are you still experiencing any PT? Well, yeah, I'm contented, but there's a little buzzy in the background. All right, you're still in two because you've got the PT left. No, I just talked to him about it. Yeah, I do have a suitcase, but no scatter in it. The higher jhanas, 5 and 6, when you're first learning them, really seem quite similar. Probably that's the two that are the closest when you're first getting there. I mean, they're both infinite, and one, the space is in front of you, and it is your mind that's that big. So, yeah, they are distinct, but at first it's not real distinct. And as you get more skilled, it's like, oh, now I get it. 7 is different enough because it's nothing. But 5, there's big space with nothing in it. And 7, there's a big nothing. So some similarity there. So it's not real distinct. And then 8 is so nebulous. Yeah, it's not 7. It's not 4. It's like, yeah. So there is, in the EEG, we could clearly see 8 different states. And I went 1 to 8, 7, 8, and back down to 1. And we could see that when I came back to 3, it looked like 3 going up. Yeah, so we do have that much data. So they are distinct states, but there is some blurring as people are learning them. Yes. By the time of the Visuddhimagga, the understanding of the jhanas had changed enough so that they had become extremely concentrated states. In order to enter the jhanas, you needed to generate a nimitta. Now, the word nimitta does appear in the suttas, and it means sign. Like if your stomach's growling, it's a sign that you're hungry. Or if you're getting the diffuse white light, it's a sign you're concentrated. Or your breath gets quiet, a sign you're concentrated. Just a generic term meaning sign. By the time of the Visuddhimagga, though, it had taken on a very specific meaning, particularly of a circle of white light that you're supposed to see. The physiological thing, as I understand it, is that, as I mentioned, as you get quiet, you stop inhibiting the neurons in your visual cortex from firing. And so you get some random firing going on. So as your brain becomes concentrated, it's not like it stops all of its activity, but the activity becomes more random. There is less activity. There's a picture of my brain on jhanas and a paper that's on the web if you want to look it up, and you can see. And you see that there's less activity. But it's more random. All of the areas still are getting some activity, but just more random. And in the visual cortex, that shows up as a diffuse white light. Now, as you get even more concentrated, the random firing becomes proportional to the neurons in an area. And in the center of your visual cortex is a circle of densely packed neurons. And when you're quiet enough, you see that you're quiet because you see a circle of white light. The firing of the neurons randomly in that circle then becomes a circle that looks like a tunnel, the moon, a star, depending on the size of it. And this is the nimitta that is required to enter the jhanas described in the suttas. The idea is you generate this nimitta, get it nice and stable, and then you absorb into it, and you go into a state of complete absorption. There is no awareness of your body, there's no awareness of sound, and there's no awareness of passage of time. You're gone. And then you come out and you can reflect back on what the experience was, because when you're there, you're gone, so you don't know what it is. It's only in retrospect that can you determine what the factors of the jhanas were and where you were in the states. So a nimitta is an artifact of deep concentration due to the random firing of the neurons proportional to how densely they're packed in your visual cortex. It can be used for what's described in the Visuddhimagga. Mm-hmm. But the jhanas in the suttas are not states of full absorption. If you were fully absorbed, you wouldn't be aware of your body, right? So you are not fully absorbed in the sutta jhanas, but you are in the Visuddhimagga, and you definitely need just focus on the breath until the nimitta appears. That is one of the methods that it teaches. But the primary method it teaches is with a kasina. A kasina is a circle, say the size of a dinner plate, that is one color. So you might have a yellow kasina, a red kasina, a blue kasina, or a white kasina. And you would set it up so that you could stare at it. And you would stare at it with your eyes open, obviously, while you meditated. And then you would close your eyes and you get an after image. So if you're staring at the red kasina, you close your eyes and you get a green after image. Now you stare at the green after image. If you don't become distracted, it won't go away. And it'll eventually turn into a nimitta. This is the method that is primarily taught in the Visuddhimagga. And so there are the four color kasinas, and there are the four element kasinas. So an earth kasina, water kasina, air kasina, and a fire kasina. So the earth kasina seems to be the preferred method. So you would get some mud and make a circle, and then you would stare at your circle of mud, close your eyes, get the after image, and use that to generate the method. That's what it talks about principally, but it does mention a bit about working with the breath, metta, and various other ways of getting there. But yeah, you just stay with the breath. The nimitta appears, and it turns out, don't look at the nimitta when it appears. Because if you do, it'll go away. You have to stay with the breath until basically the nimitta and the breath become the same thing. All right, the nimitta, you're noticing the breath here, and the nimitta is here. And then you can put your attention on it because you're not moving your attention. And then you can absorb into it. Whereas being on retreat for 6 months to a year, meditating multiple times a day for, give it 3 hours for each sitting. Now, I have actually been in the Visuddhimagga first jhana one time. I sat a second retreat with Powell in 2011. And about a little over 2 months into that retreat, I actually was able to absorb into the nimitta. I'd been getting the nimitta for about a month, and I did absorb into it. And it was only about, it was under an hour into the sitting. But I'd been on retreat at that point for about 5.5 months, you know, just meditating, somewhere between 7 or 8 hours a day, sitting meditation or lying down meditation. So it really is a matter of building your concentration over an extremely long time. And then when you get that concentrated and the nimitta shows up, then you absorb into it. My problem was I could get the nimitta again, no problem. And the next time after I'd gotten it, it was like, okay, I'm going to watch what happens. You can't watch what happens. If you watch what happens, nothing happens. You have to not watch what happens. So it's like, don't think of a pink elephant. Right? I never could get back there. But yeah, it would require me about an hour to get the nimitta really nice and steady. And then I would hang out, you know, there's the nimitta, I'm just breathing, and this would go on for an hour or two. And usually what would happen, I would drift off into the second jhana that I know, or the third, or the fourth. Or my bladder would go, nah, your meditation period's over. Is there a difference in quality of the sitting, or the meditation period, between sitting and lying down? Yes, sitting is more alert, more energized, definitely goes better. Until my body starts complaining, and then it goes worse. So if I'm going to do a long meditation period, it just works better to lie down. It's going to take me a longer time to ramp up to the same level of concentration, but I can extend it for a much longer period. After an hour and a half, my body starts complaining. After 2 hours, my body is distracting me enough, so I'm not really well concentrated. Whereas lying down, I can go as long as, you know, as long as my bladder will allow, basically. Can get. Okay, so what's the minimum amount of concentration before turning to insight practice? And the answer is whatever you can get. Right? So given the circumstances, I would say for every meditation period, and I'm going to assume 45 minutes as a minimum, spend some time getting concentrated and then some time doing insight practice. So maybe, you know, you just follow your breath and you're just continually coming back from the distractions for 15 or 20 minutes at the start of the sitting before you start doing whatever your insight practice might be. But what's going to make a big difference? Yeah, I would say being able to get to the first four jhanas. It made a huge difference in my practice. So I had learned the first eight jhanas after 6 years of practice. And it was like during those first 6 years, I got behind the wheel of a car, and I discovered that if you push the lever up, it blinks on that side, and you push it down, it blinks on that side. Gotten some insight, right? Well, a 1 month retreat practicing eight jhanas and then following that with insight practice. It was like I backed the car out of the parking lot, drove around the block. You know, I wasn't on the motorway yet, but it was just astonishingly how much more insight I got once I had a mind that was significantly more concentrated. I went home and my friends could see a difference. Yeah, it was really a life-changing event. As much concentration as you can get, given the circumstances, you will get significantly more concentration on a one-week retreat or a 10-day retreat or two-week retreat, and even more on a month-long. You know, if you go on a long retreat, would you miss these when you came back to daily life? You could still get to these states. It wouldn't be as intense. But remember, they're a warm-up exercise. They're not the real show. You know, they didn't give any gold medals for people doing warm-up exercises when the Olympics were here. It's always for the real thing. And the insight stuff is the real thing. So yeah, you go into these states, they're really nice, it's quite profound, but the insights are so much more profound. Sometimes people ask me about jhana addiction. Can you get addicted to the jhanas? Well, some people get kind of hung up on it, but once I can push them into doing insight practice, the flood of insights that comes gets them over their addiction right away. I mean, understanding how the world works and being able to operate in harmony with it is so much better than just getting high. So yeah, the states are really nice. Okay. But when you come out, the world is just as crazy as when you went in. But when you understand how it works and you stop making the stupid mistakes, that's a lot better than the usual way. Okay, we're going to have to make this the last one because we're running out of time, but I will stick around so you can ask more questions. Jhana practice, if any, do you need to attain the first level of awakening known as stream entry and the subsequent levels? I would say probably you don't need the jhanas for the first level. It seems quite unlikely. The reason I'm sort of hesitating here is I would say we're not really clear as to what it means to enter the stream. I have on my website a chart of various ideas about the four stages of awakening and so forth. But I would say that I have met people that I suspected had had this profound experience, and yet they weren't able to access the jhanas. They'd never been in a jhana. When I tried to teach it to them, they weren't having much luck. But it did seem as though they had had a really life-changing, profound experience there. I've met others who, yeah, definitely had a life-changing, profound experience, never experienced the jhanas, and learned the jhanas really easy. So I would say for the first level, jhanas are not required. For full awakening, we seem to be really short on fully awakened people to survey. I could make a very good case that you must have the jhanas or the jhanas are totally unnecessary by reading different passages from the suttas. So I'm going to put that one in the category of, I don't know. We need more fully awakened people so we can do adequate surveys, and I would suggest that all of you get fully awakened and report back to me whether you needed the jhanas or not. It would help a lot, and we could answer Bhante's question.